This is Everything is Workable, a podcast where we examine how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of wisdom. In this season, I talk to other people about their approach to life and practice. Today's episode is with Diane Dutchin, a personal coach based out of Vancouver, British Columbia. Diane and I had a delightful discussion about the power of reframing and how self-awareness calls us to action, to take personal responsibility for our attitude and way of being in the world. Apologies for the sound quality. I did the best that I could with my self-taught editing skills. Please take the time to listen through as Diane shares some really wonderful insights, and it's well worth listening to. Also, content notification warning, there is a little bit of swearing. As ever, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Your support in getting it in front of an even wider audience is hugely appreciated. You can also support the show by leaving me a tip through my website, CaitlinSCHatch.com. And now, on with the show. So you're in Vancouver.
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm in Vancouver. Beautiful, rainy, gorgeous Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, I'm in beautiful, snowy, gorgeous Calgary.
Oh my goodness, so it's snowing there.
It is. It was raining this morning, but it has turned to snow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your approach, what you said when you filled in the application, was a bit about working with your mind and the importance of that. And that's obviously like a thread and a theme that runs through Everything is Workable. But I guess my question would be, when you say working with your mind, what do you mean by that?
When I made that statement, what I was referencing is that I think in my life, based on my own experience and what I've shared with clients and work with clients on, is that if your mind, what I like to call it as my mind being in gear, if it's not part of my process, it's not part of my decision making, it's not part of what I want to reach for and do, I've found that there's no stickiness to it, if you want to call it that. There's no thump. It doesn't have that strength. And I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I've been a personal trainer for a number of years. And I get the fact and I understand how we go to the gym and we work our bodies. Mm-hmm. Because we want to strengthen the muscle of, you know, either work our abs or whatever part of our body or overall our whole body, we want to strengthen our muscle and look fun and everything. But yet along that way, sometimes exercising the muscle of the mind becomes the least important thing, or even it's a non-issue. It's like the mind, yeah, I got a mind and, you know, it's there and I use it. But we don't give it enough attention, I don't think. And I found when I start to get it more involved and really think and use it appropriately, exercise it, I find my decision making and how I apply it to a particular area or how I invite it into that particular and apply it, I get better results.
Mm-hmm. And I love that, the imagery of your mind being a muscle to work. So you go to the gym and you've got your different things where you can like, okay, I really want to work on my legs, so I'm going to go on the treadmill for a little bit. I'm going to do some upper body. I might go and do some weightlifting, that kind of thing. So what mm-hmm. sort of tools do you use when it comes to working with your mind? Like, how do you exercise your mind? How do you approach that?
Okay. So I have a couple of things that I do. Let's use wanting to lose body fat. I want to lose body fat. I have a workout plan and everything, and I want to lose that, lose body fat. And I'm not getting the results that I want. And what I found is when I take a look at my mindset, how am I thinking about that particular area? Mm. And that's a tool that I use in terms of I sit down, and what I like to use, I'm sure it's not something new out there, it's called mind mapping. And so I draw a circle in the middle of the paper and I put, let's say, fat loss. And around it, I start writing words when I think about myself. What I think about myself pertaining to fat loss. And when I start putting those words down, I began to see a pattern. And my pattern is I'm hard on myself. I am saying mean things to myself. I'm thinking that I'm not good enough. And so all these negativity is attached to my fat loss. And so when I look at that, I mean, there's always something, I mean, yeah, love technology and all that, but you can't beat pen and paper. And I think there is such a connection with that. When we pick that pen and paper up and we look at it, a whole new life comes up and we look at it and it's like, oh my gosh. And for me, that's my aha wake up moment. When I look at those words and say, this is how I've been processing what I think about myself in this area. And then I pull out another piece of paper and then I do the same thing. What is it I really want to achieve? What is it that I want to be happy with in my physical wellness or my physical fitness? And I start writing words down that will help me, that will empower me. And that's where I use that term, minding gear, because now I'm not pushing against what I really want, because mentally I'm pushing against it. Physically, I'm doing all the right things. Externally, we do all the right things, but we say all the right things, but we look the right way. But internally, there's a different kind of message or music or story going on. And the only way I'm going to know what's really going on is when I quiet myself, sit down and listen to my thoughts.
Right. And sort of see how your thoughts are playing with your physical action and actually, like you said, right, it's becoming very aware of it.
Yeah.
So would you describe it sort of as like the difference between doing, so like being actively involved and noticing versus just being, sort of like when you just are sort of being there and letting it happen without really having any consciousness of it?
Definitely. You got it.
Yeah. So mind maps are great. And that's an interesting one because that really speaks about language and the language we use. And I think the being really hard on yourself is a pretty common problem.
Yes.
So what are some of the techniques that you've developed to counteract that hardness on yourself? So you do a motivational mind map after you've done one where you've determined the negative words. But what other things do you use, like when you're actually then working on something? So like you're actively at the gym, in your training, and you notice a negative thought. How do you address that?
Okay. For every negative thought, like let's take nature, for example. I'm in the garden and I'm planting, I thought I was planting an apple tree. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up getting was a pear tree. Right? I mean, people like their pears and I like pears, but this is an example. And so, let's use a flower plant, because pear trees takes years to grow, but it's a flower plant. End up getting the wrong flower plant. So in order for me to make an exchange, I got to take that flower plant out, but I just can't leave that space empty. I got to replace it with what I want. So if I am feeding myself a negative thought and say, oh, I can't stand looking at myself in the mirror, then what I do is, What is my filler there? What is it that I want to be able to say and be and embrace about myself? So in that aspect, I have to have a filler. I have to have something to replace it, something healthier, something that will give me a lift and encourage and support me, support me in my journey. And that's something that I have found that works for me.
When you're doing that sort of replacing a negative thought with a positive one, I think one of the touchy problems that comes up is that there's like a sort of a sense of positive affirmations, right? Uh-huh. And like, oh, if you do enough positive affirmations, then you'll feel better, which if you don't buy it, doesn't really help. Like it doesn't really work. So I'm thinking like my own experience, when I have some sort of negative thing come up and I'm like, wow, I'm being really hard on myself. Taking an approach of finding that replacement thought, but making sure that it's one that I genuinely do believe. Like it's one thing to go, I should be doing more. I should be producing more in my day. And because I'm not, I'm lazy. And then I could think, well, actually, where's the confirmation that I'm not actually producing things? And can I look at what I have done today, even if it might not have been what I wanted to accomplish today? And go, well, actually, you were very productive. And then replace it with, well, actually, you were very productive. You're not lazy. And there's no proof in that.
Well, how I would look at that is, I always say to myself, how is this serving me? Ah. And that's something I use. How is this serving me? Like, by me looking at myself and saying, you know, oh, I can't stand myself. I'm this and I'm that. And how is it serving me? How is it really making me feel?
Yeah, that is such a good one. Okay, because that's another one where people do convince themselves. I know I do this. Convince themselves that being hard on yourself will help, even though there's no proof of that. So that's such a powerful question to say, how is that serving me? How is this serving me? Like, has it ever in the past served me to be really hard on myself? Have you ever met anyone who's been able to answer yes to that?
Yeah, I have, where, you know, they would use it in terms of work.
Okay.
To drive them. Say, you know, if I'm not hard on myself, I feel that part of being accountable and to push me, then I say, well, how far do you stretch that? Is it something that is a regular part of your life or your work life? Is this how you operate? And then at the end of the day or the end of your week, is there a reward? Because if it's all about that drive, then where is the reward? Where is the fulfillment?
Right. Because then you're like in cultivating awareness of how people function, right? So on the one hand, there's an acknowledgement that being really hard on yourself is negative, and people are like, right, that's not helpful. But then on the other hand, there's some really strong justification for it that people use. And so that's a difficult barrier to break through. Is that something in your own life that you've had to work with?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it's that awareness piece where I'm always, if I find that I'm really like, okay, I could have done more, like when I look at my hours, I should have blah, 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 blah. It's like, hold a second. And one of the things that I do is look at, what have I done that I could celebrate? What is it that I've done today or this week? When I look at my, if I look at my practice, what is it I've done to celebrate? And you know, just as a side piece here, a couple of months ago, I was a little bit down on myself about, oh, you know, I really want to make a difference in the lives of women and blah, 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 and doing all this. And I feel that there is such a, like I'm not doing as much as I, my reach isn't as far as I would like it to in this moment. And all of a sudden I paused long enough and I'm sitting there on the bus and it like hit me in the face. And it's, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I have clients and what am I doing with them? Am I not making a difference? No, I'm not out there. My name isn't all over the place and said, oh, Diana is saving the world and doing this for women. But even if it's one, and I always used to use that as my motto, is that if I can make a difference in one life, I'm doing great. Because a life is being impacted by something I've said or something I've done to help lift their soul, to help encourage them, to help inspire them. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
But how many times, you know, again, going back to that place where we beat ourselves up and we entertain and feed on all, let our minds be consumed with all that, oh, blah, 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 all this stuff that is not really feeding or nourishing our soul and inspiring us and not serving us. And we just feed into that.
It's an interesting approach, really, considering what is enough, right? And like adjusting in your brain what you think of as enough.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciating, because I do find that quite often, is that we don't value the impact that we have, even on just one other individual. We don't value the importance of our role if we think like the number of people we're affecting isn't enough people, or our voice isn't out there to enough of an audience.
Mm-hmm. You know, can I just touch on a point you just made?
Yeah.
The word that comes to mind is practice.
Yeah.
And it comes over time. Because I always say, once you have an awareness, you have a responsibility. And it comes with practice. Like all our lives, or most of my life, is I'm always down on myself about my body image or about, you know, I'm not good enough at this. Then I'm going to still keep being not good enough at this until I flip and change my attitude. And my, you know, I could say, oh, I believe this, but it's not so much about how much I believe that I'm good enough. What is my behavior saying about my belief? I mean, that's a different topic, but
Well, you know what I mean? It's a good point, right? It's what you say and what you do and what you think. Like they all, they're all part of the same thing. Like they're all interconnected. In. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the practice aspect is a really big part of it, and that's something that I'm always emphasizing on Everything Is Workable, is saying like this isn't about just doing it once and suddenly it's fine and it all works. Like practice is constant. It's a really ongoing process.
Definitely. You know, it's part of our life development. We work on our cars and we work on our homes and we do all that. But when it comes to our own lives and our minds, which is why I find is the most beautiful, important piece. I see that as the engine, you know, that gets us moving forward and gives us the pieces we need to be able to make decisions and changes. And if we're not connected with that and exercising it and feeding it and nurturing it, it's to our demise, I think.
Well, and also, like, there's those pathways that get created in the mind that get created over years from so many different habitual patterns of thought and action. And it is hard work to rewrite those.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of hard work, especially if you've been doing it for most of your life. It's not going to be something that, oh, well, you know, I'll start doing morning affirmations and within a week I'll be fine.
I know. No, and that's like, you know, when we talk about, you know, positive thinking, just think these thoughts and your whole life is going to be airy fairy and better. No, it takes work. And I always find what's helpful is to separate that overwhelming feeling that people get and think, oh my gosh, my whole life I've been like this and now I have to change. Like, is it going to take another lifetime? And I always encourage them to pick one area. We can always improve in different areas, and some are stronger than others and some are weaker. So pick the area that matters to you most. You know, if it has to do with work related and how you think, pick that area. And what is one thing you can do today? One thing. Differently or think differently. Like if when someone approaches you at your desk and the boss is an asshole or whatever, then what are you going to do? If you normally behave this way and think this way, here is your opportunity to behave and think another way. And so we explore, what does that look like? What is it you'd like to think and how would you like to be? And then we practice that for a whole week. And then you pay attention. And then what I say, and for my own life, to what I do is I write down, how does that make me feel? Am I feeling empowered? I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel strong. I feel in control. I feel like, you know, I'm not being used and abused. I have a say. And then that enlightenment fuels the, I like this path, you know, piece by piece, little by little practice.
Yeah. As well as baby steps, right?
Yes. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And allowing for backward steps.
We have to. Kate, I am on board with you on that. We have to make room for setbacks.
Yeah.
You know, we make plans, and plans are great, and having goals and reach, but we forget the setback piece. And if we don't think about it and plan for it and prepare for it and have it there and say, hey, this may happen, it hits us like a ton of brick. It derails us. And sometimes we're like, oh, maybe I'm not meant to do this. Maybe I should just, no. Don't let a setback stop you. Yeah, that's a piece that is always important to bring into a conversation, whatever it is that we're attaining to do and be and change and transform into and become. Setbacks are going to happen, baby.
How do you bring gentleness into all of it? Because I think like that speaks to that, right? Like allowing there to be setbacks is part of it, and knowing that you won't get it right and that it's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
And again, being something to counteract the habitual negativity that so many people can get into.
Yeah, that's a good question. How do we bring gentleness into it? I think of the word nurture and being kind to yourself. And just going back to what we said earlier about always being so hard on ourselves. It's a piece to definitely involve and say, you know, being able to give yourself a break, and you were allowed to make mistakes and we're allowed to fall. I always use this analogy. If you're teaching a kid, your kid or someone else's kid, to ride a bike and they fall down the first time, it's like, okay, put the bike away. You're done. No. You go to the kid, you encourage them, you rub their knee, you rub their elbow, whatever is hurting. Say, you can do this. You're doing it great. Being gentle, being kind and nurturing. And then the next thing you know, freaking kid is right in the butt. Why not use that in our own lives? Why not apply that? And I always find it, I don't know why it is, is that we're always the hardest in ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, if my friend or your friend is saying something that similar experience, we're like, just give yourself a break. It's okay. You know, you're doing great. Just think of all your accomplishments. Think of how far you've come. But when it comes to ourselves, it's a different story. Why not apply that same ointment of kindness and love to ourselves? And I think that's where that gentle piece could come in. Gentleness can be applied.
Yeah. Well, and it works the other way as well, right? Like if we had friends in our lives who were as hard on us as we are on ourselves, I wouldn't keep someone like that in my life. It's something I work on quite often, and it's something my wife will say. She'll say to me, I'll say something about myself, like really disparaging, and she'll be like, don't talk about my wife that way. I don't appreciate that. It's a really good practice that she does for me, where she just puts me on the spot and I have to really stop and be like, oh, right, what did I just say?
That's good. Yeah, because it's true. You know, we always sometimes become our worst enemy. And I find in my relationship with my wife, I always use the pause with each other.
Oh, the pause.
Pause.
Explain the pause.
The pause effect is, and it's simply, if we're discussing something and one person is getting into that nasty space or mean space or pointing a finger or whatever, we have given each other the right to say pause. Just that word, pause. And that pause, just by saying that word, triggers the other person to say, you need to take a step back. Where you're going is unkind. It's not helpful. It's not necessary. And just by saying it, sometimes it turns into, it softens everything. And we start to laugh. And it's like, you know what? I'm sorry. Let me start over. Or I didn't mean it that way. Thanks for the pause. Sometimes I use that as often in my own life. I take transit to work, and or if I'm going into the city, and on transit, I find myself, if sometimes someone pisses me off and I'm thinking something mean, I'm like, pause, don't even go there. Why feed that? What's the purpose? What am I going to get out of it? And, you know, there's certain things, words that I use in my life that helps me keeps me on track. And then there's sometimes I don't give a, and I'm just like, you know what, I'm tired today. This is where I'm at. I'm human. And I find that pause word is.
Yeah, I like the pause quite a lot. I mean, that's something that is taught a lot in Buddhism, is the taking three conscious breaths. Same sort of thing, right? Just stopping for a moment.
Yeah.
Take three conscious breaths. And then it brings you into the present moment. You become aware of what you're thinking and
what's going on. Yeah, for sure.
How do you deal with out of control thoughts?
That's a good one. How do I deal with? I found that my thoughts become out of control when I'm tired. When I'm physically or mentally tired, my thoughts are happy. My out of control thoughts wake up and it's like, woo! You know, when I become aware of it and when they're out of control, I like to write a lot. So I find journaling helps me. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't work for everyone, so I always would say to my clients, what would work for you? Is it taking a nap? Is it going out in nature for a walk? What would work for you? Or if you can identify why your thoughts are out of control, what is the trigger that gets your thoughts out of control? For me, it's when I'm tired. What is it that gets your thoughts? Then if you can identify what it is, you'll better be able to know how to correct it or fix it or change it.
Or even just to sit with it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like I'm really tired right now and I can't have a nap, but I know that that's why. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to ask, and I don't know if this is the right way to phrase the question, but what is important to you about working with women specifically with what you do? If it is in fact important to you. I get the impression that it's something that's important to you. And I just
It stems a lot from I'm going to try to put everything in a capsule. It stems a lot from my life experience as a woman and how I've been treated in my life, and working with women within a job and listening to their stories and how they're being treated, either by their mother-in-law because from a culture, from a different culture, or for their husbands or their wives and or partners, and how they sit in it and take it and make excuses and things like that. And the confidence piece, I grew up as a fat, very chubby kid and teased a lot and bullied a lot. I grew up, you know, where my sister was bullied a lot and didn't have that label as being bullied, and all those different, there's a, just a bunch of different moving parts that has brought me to this place where I'm at today. And prior to finding out my, just having that desire to work specifically with women, I struggled with it for a long time because I thought, I don't want to, you know, people to think, well, what's wrong with men? Why don't you want to work with men? Are they not good enough? Blah, blah, blah. And I thought, but this is about me and what moves me and what inspires me. And I love men. I have a lot of my father, my lots of male friends and great relationships going on. But this is the piece that I feel the most connected to, the most that awakens me. And that's why I do what I do. It's, you know, I always say, you know, sometimes I hate the labels because there's just so much is about labels that I don't like, and we shouldn't be labeled. And but unfortunately, we live in a world where we are labeled out there for different reasons and different things. But what I like to do is when I always say there is, even though I work specifically with women, there are four areas I find is my specialty, because I'm not gonna ever sit here and speak to someone and say that I am special in every area when it comes to dealing with women, and I'm not. And I make that very clear. But the 4 years I find it really, or 5 years that I can relate to the most and that really inspires me. I mean, aside from being a woman of color and a gay woman, that in itself is a lot going on, but it's confidence and the ability to be confident in your own skin and love yourself, stand in it, and be your best self. I get emotional when I talk about this because there are just way too many women and girls out there that are not, and they have so much to live and give and be, and is being stifled and robbed because of labels, because of not a person that has, they're either given their power away and not realize I've given my power away to this person, and just being controlled. And I can go on and on about it, but that's just a piece of what I do, why I like enjoy working with men.
So it's an interesting one for me, because I am really interested in implicit bias and the way that working on cultivating awareness of my mind, I become very aware of implicit bias within it. And there's a default assumption that if you belong to a group, you can't have implicit bias towards that group, which I had that bubble popped for me when I watched Mary Beard's talk called Oh, Do Shut Up, Dear, which is amazing and fabulous, where she goes through the history of the policing of women's voices specifically, which was really interesting because, of course, there's a lot of stuff out there about the policing of women's bodies. But the policing of women's voices is an interesting thing to become aware of. And when I watched it, what I realized was not how often other people policed my voice, but things that I said, phrases that I had that were policing other women. And having this sudden awareness of that in myself, which was just so weird, because I'm like, well, I'm such a, like, I'm totally a feminist. I'm a very strong advocate for, like, against sexism. And yet I have these implicit biases just by virtue of the patriarchal culture in which I was raised. And having that sort of awareness is, it's a really powerful thing. So how do you, for yourself, how do you work with cultivating that awareness with yourself, and then cultivating it with women you work with, and also cultivating it with the men that you work with? Because it sounds like that's like in your passion and why you're driven to do this is really because you see what you're talking about giving power away, right? And the way that women's bodies are policed, the way that their voices are policed, like that is all, that's that whole power aspect, and it being either taken away or that we give it away without even realizing we're giving it away, uh-huh. because we've been told for so long that, you know, it's our fault if we get raped, that kind of thing, you know? I know that's kind of a huge question, right? Like, how do you address that?
That is a big question.
And I just to put one more point of clarification on it is understanding that one of my big things is, you know, we're all part of the bigger whole. And speaking to what you said about whether or not you're actually making a difference and saying how, like, realizing that when you're doing, even when you're only working on yourself, you are making a difference. So yes, this is like a massive problem that we're talking about when we're talking about sexism in society. But understanding that because we are part of society, we're not outside of it. So by addressing it within ourselves, we are addressing the issue.
Yeah, I always, that's a loaded question.
It really is. Sorry, this happens all the time.
yeah, I know. Oh my gosh, where do I start with this one? One of the things that for my own self, let me start with myself because this is my truth, and I'm trying to pick an area. I was born in South America, and that's where I grew up for the first 20 years of my life. And I was always taught, you know, that girls can do certain things, you know, girls can get into carpentry or being a mechanic or certain things because you're a girl. And you grew up with that. I carried that with me for a while. Or one of the things that girls can lift weights because girls will have muscles, and that's a man thing, a boy thing. Over my life, as I grew, one of the things that helps me is I always ask myself questions, is who told me so?
Mm.
Who told me that? And what truth is that in it? Is what kind of truth does that really hold? And so it's like I start to break things down. And that's what I use with my clients too. It's like, who told me so? Like, I'm holding on to this. And why? And don't get me wrong. Let me make this very clear. I think, like, when you talk about when you mentioned the word about being unbiased, it's... sadly, sometimes women are the worst in terms of how we treat other women and what we talk about our own female friends or workers. We get in on it with the male gender and we do as much damage, sometimes even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that needs to stop. We just got to take it, do your part. Let me do my part. You do your part. And if we all do our own part and to make this better. But I always come back to myself and I said, who told me so? Mm-hmm. And what kind of truth does that hold? That's my starting point. And so when I think about it, my emotions would be sadness. Either way, I'd be sad or I get angry and realize, oh my gosh, then if I'm so tied to this and it becomes my truth because my dad told me so, but is it a truth? Is it something that's valid?
Yeah.
Then what is it that I can do? Because if I want to become a mechanic or a plumber in my country, then what is it that I need to do to challenge that? So if I was a man, then it would be okay. It's acceptable. What is acceptable and unacceptable? I'm human as much as you are. The color of my skin might be different. I have different body parts, but...
Yeah, I think it's one of those things of realizing that our embodiment is valid to our experience, but the perversions around it are not.
Hmm.
And I'm totally taking that from Earth Lynn Manuel, who's an amazing Zen priest. So I can't take credit for that. But so it's valid that I am a woman, but the belief that I am completely unable or shouldn't be allowed to do certain things is not valid.
Mm-hmm.
And then yes, where does that come from? Where have I seen that? Where have I, I think that's really good. Cause it's something that I am working on all the time. Like, I catch thoughts that I didn't catch before. So I catch judgments about what other people are wearing, and it's not always directed towards women. It's kind of just directed towards anybody. There's sort of rules. But I realize how much the rules I think I have in my head about what people should be allowed to wear are based on those perversions around embodiment. So someone who's overweight shouldn't wear certain things. Somebody who is women, if they're going to dress in a particular way, make certain assumptions about them and the value that they have. Yeah. Rather than just going, well, why shouldn't someone just be able to wear what's comfortable? You know, and like a really good pointed example of that right now is within the Black Lives Matter movement and what's happening with it. But the very common thing that's being talked about is like, well, if he hadn't dressed that way, if he wasn't wearing a hoodie, right? So what is it that we're saying when we say like, hoodies are fine unless you're a Black man, because then you look threatening.
Exactly. I know, eh? Yeah. There's always going to be something.
Yeah. And it's such a weird perversion. And it's true, because then you think, well, yeah, who told me that? Who told me that a Black man in a hoodie is dangerous? Where does that come from? Is there any truth to it?
No. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
No. I mean, hoodies are comfortable. I'm a Canadian. It's like national pride. I have to have at least five.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, talking about this hoodie thing, it's interesting that even sometimes now the weather's changing and I go out and if I wear a toque and then I put my hoodie over it, I actually look. I could pass, if someone walking by, they could not recognize me as a female. I could be recognized as a guy. And sometimes I think about that. And that's so sad that my attire could impact a reaction from someone, or, you know?
That's also a really interesting comment on self-awareness. Like, if I go out with a hoodie and a toque on, and in the winter, I am often mistaken for a boy. Never a man, for a boy. People think I'm like 17. And so they'll use male pronouns, and then they realize, and they kind of are like, oh, sorry. But I never go out with a conscious awareness that I could be mistaken for somebody that people would assume is violent. So that's like a whole different level of self-awareness there. An awareness of your experience and your place in society and the way that society might perceive someone based on a perversion around an embodiment. It's an interesting level of awareness to reach, because there is some fear there, right? Like, It carries fear with it. Sometimes I am aware that if I am mistaken as male, there could then also be, and like, this is something that's new for me because of issues around trans people using bathrooms in the States. I am not a feminine presenting woman. So now I do have this level of fear when I use a public washroom, and it's not really strong, but it's there. Like, I notice it, that someone might get aggressive towards me because of an assumption they might make about my gender presentation. And all I want to do is pee.
Okay, then, eh? But isn't that, we're not allowed to be ourselves. And that's one of the things that we, in society, in this life we live, that to be ourselves and be accepted and just be yourself and do your thing. Like, don't judge me and don't label me and don't, because I don't do that. You know, this is something that in terms of conversation that I struggle with. When you're introducing your wife, you go introduce your wife to a party, or you're talking about introducing yourself, you never say, oh, hey, my name is Diana and I'm straight. You know, our sexual preference or who we are, that never comes into play with a straight person.
Yeah.
So why is it that we feel sometimes that we have to say that, get that out? Let's just get it out there before people get all weird out.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing to work with, right? Because you're working with a level of awareness of your experience that then you are aware other people aren't aware of.
Yeah. Yes.
It's an interesting tension to watch in the world today, because the internet as a global communication device means those stories are out there now. And the backlash that's being met with is that when people are being told, your experience is different from mine, and your lack of awareness of that might be harming me, that's really hard for people. That puts people in very uncomfortable positions. And I appreciate, like, I'm coming from it from a place where I will tell my friends, I'll say, like, because of our relationship, I trust that you are a safe person. And therefore, even though it might be uncomfortable, you can go ahead and tell me and point out my ignorance to me. I want you to do that. Please point out my ignorance to me, because I know I have implicit bias. I know that I will say or do things that are painfully middle class or painfully white or painfully able-bodied, and it will be embarrassing. And as my friend, I would trust that because you love and care for me, you would say, hey, that thing you said?
Not cool. That's good. That's a great way to do it. I like that.
But I mean, like, that's a hard place to get to. I think it's very difficult for people to get to, because we get into this mindset of being told, like, we think if we're called out for an implicit bias or it's pointed out to us, that we're being told that we're a bad person. And it would be lovely to live in a world that was free of labels. But labels can be helpful to navigate. And so it's, I guess, what I appreciate about how you've spoken about things today and what you're talking about and how you take this approach is, like, you're figuring out how to navigate with those labels while having an awareness of the experience around them, the habits around them, like, to have those conversations with an individual. I think that's the other thing, right? Like, you're talking about doing this work for yourself, and you're talking about your clients doing it for themselves. It's not about changing other people. It is genuinely about changing yourself, your own approach, your own mindset.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. Can I add one more thing? Just to our conversation here we were having, going back to comments about this, how women are treated, or how we're looked at, or how we're spoken to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that when I start getting to know my wife, that I always would say certain comments like, don't be a girl, get some balls, don't be a pussy. And it's like, she would look at me flabbergasted and said, I don't want to get to know you if this is who you are. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And Kate, I tell you, as I sit here, I did not realize, I wasn't aware of those comments, how damaging they were, and how it was what I was really doing. It was an eye opener. You know, we have a beagle dog, and sometimes she's crying or whatever, and I said, stop being such a girl. And then she would look at me and I'm like, but she is a girl. So I'm justified.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you think, like, when I say that, like you said, who told me that? Where did I learn that? When did being a girl become a bad thing?
Yes.
So my wrap-up question, which is probably not going to have a short answer,
okay,
is for you to share an influential teacher or a book that you really love or a podcast that you listen to regularly, something, sort of resources that you go to in your life for support with what you do when you're working with your mind, for support professionally, for working with your clients and things. So just sort of recommending signposts to listeners. So if they want to know more about this or take this approach or understand a bit about your personal practice and how you've done it, where would you say, like, this is a great teacher, this is a great book, this is a great podcast that you would recommend?
That is not a short answer. Or there is no short answer. The first book that comes to mind, it's called A Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes. I found that book. When I got the book, I thought, oh, I don't know how this was applicable to me, what I can get from it. But I got into that book, I found that I could relate to it so much. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of great teaching points, a lot of aha moments, a lot of awareness, a lot of, oh my gosh. And it is actually a book that I give as gifts, and a book that I reference often, or not often, but I reference in my practice and apply to my own life. The Year of Yes, basically, it's about, you know, taking care of yourself and looking at areas of your life and saying, where have you been saying no to, and what can you be saying yes to? Because all of a sudden, you know, a lot of times one of the things is that it's healthy to say no. And just go with that, but what about yes for yourself? Mm-hmm. And that's a great piece. Brené Brown, I like her work, and I, you know, read her books, and take some of her courses, and look at some of her stuff, and I find that inspiring as well for myself. I mean, like with any book or any podcast or anything we listen to or read, I never say to someone, you'll get so much out of it in everything page to page, because it's never the case, because it could be one line or one sentence that you could hear or read, and that will spark something in you that will be, that will nourish your soul and be good for you and help transform your life. And so that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, you're so very welcome. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you for listening. You can find out more about Diane's work through her website, makethemovecoaching.com, and she also invites listeners to connect with her on LinkedIn. You can find out more about what I do through my website, caitlinschatch.com, where you can sign up to get my monthly wrap-up email or leave a tip to help keep this show running. Also, if you've really enjoyed this show, you can share this episode or any other episodes to help me get it in front of a wider audience. Thank you to Dexter Britton for composing the fantastic music accompanying this and the previous two seasons of Everything is Workable.